To go directly then into the Wilmington Learning Collaborative presentation. So we have with us two individuals. I know they've been doing a lot of this presentation, and several of our board members have already had the chance to hear this. So Jenna's going to pull it up on the screen, but we have with us tonight Mr. John Sheehan from the Governor's Office and Mr. Jim Simmons, who represents Department of Education. And they're going to walk through some of the information, the presentation on the Wilmington Learning Collaboration. So they can go ahead, and then we'll have time for questions from board members at the end.
Thank you. Jim's going to start, and then I'll pick up midway through.
So good evening to all of the state board members and those others who may be listening that I don't see on the screen, and I don't know that they're there. To the folks that I know from previous relationships, nice to see you again. And to those who I haven't had the pleasure of meeting, nice to see you. I look forward to meeting you once we move to a different place in our country around our health and safety protocol. So I'm here to talk about the Wilmington Learning Collaborative, which Wendy mentioned that some of you have seen, some of you have not, but we are going to give you the Reader's Digest version. And so I don't want to shortchange anyone, but I want to get to the place where you can ask questions, because I think answering those questions better frames what we're going to do. So I'll move through them relatively quickly, but trying to provide enough information so that it has some substance. So this is a framework that we've taken from multiple different, I'm gonna say, innovation zones around the country. And what we've done is taken that framework and retrofit it to Wilmington. And Wilmington has some different challenges from those other cities around the country, and those other districts around the country. So that's why we wanted to retrofit it. I will say the key piece to this is that we're creating a shell, and then we're asking, thus the word collaborative, for the districts and the folks who decide to participate to help us build it. I used to use the verbiage from the ground up. That sounds like there's a hierarchy. What I want to say is, for those folks who have boots on the ground, those folks who are doing the work day to day, some of the things that Dr. Holiday talked about when he was talking earlier, and talking about those educators who are in the classrooms every day, what do they need? And so to try to build something for them, to give it to them, would be a mistake. So our approach is to build something with them. So next slide, please. And so whether you work in education or not, serving on this board, you are all too familiar with some of the challenges that are on the screen. When the DSEG order hit, and I was a student at the time, intentionally, for good reasons, unintentionally, it caused a number of problems in the city of Wilmington, when it caused a number of fragmented governance structures where our city is divided amongst 4 or 5 districts, if you talk about K through 12. And so that fragmented governance means that students in our city, blocks apart, can go to different schools, which have different systems and structures, codes of conduct. And while they're similar, it's a challenge, especially for a population of folks who oftentimes are transient and move not at those opportune times, like at the end of a school year, or the beginning of a school year, or even at a marking period in, right? So that movement can affect their academic achievement. If you're aware of the WEIC commission had initially made a recommendation to move Christina out of the city, and that those buildings would go to Red Clay. But one of the issues was the facility. So the governor's office and my office, who oversees part of those projects, has refurbished 3 of the buildings in Christina. 2 of them, well, I'm gonna say 1 of them's being leased by Golf Tainer over on South Bridge, in the South Bridge area. Pulaski's was going to be closed, but we're using that as swing space as we renovate Fired, and then we're working to build a new Bancroft on the east side. All of those things, plus many other things, lead to low achievement rates, high absenteeism, and there's plenty of other things that impact that as well. I'm going to talk about recruiting and retention on the next slide. So next slide, please. If you're not aware of my history, I'm a lifelong educator. I'm a former principal. I've been a principal of 2 different buildings, Mount Pleasant High School and Brandywine High School. And this slide means a ton to me as a principal, because when you talk about retention of teachers or losing those teachers over a three-year period. So I'm a used buyer, but I certainly don't want to pick on Byard above anyone else. But when you're losing 70% of your staff every 3 years, what does that mean as a principal? That means that the climate and culture of your building that you're trying to establish is always on shaky ground, because you're consistently rebuilding it. Any professional development or professional learning that you've implemented, you're always redoing. So you're always on year one, two, or three, and you're always constantly redoing it. It also impacts the ability for families who, and when we talk about families in the city that are often have reservations around going back to schools and the school system, when they don't have that consistency around being able to go and see folks that they've dealt with and worked with over time. I was fortunate to work at Mount Pleasant as a teacher and a coach, and those relationships that I built with families over time were impactful, where I developed the trust, where maybe they didn't trust the principal at the time, but they would say, well, my eldest son played football for Mr. Simmons. So if Mr. Simmons says that Dr. Holdick's okay, then Dr. Holdick might be okay, right? So it gives you a chance to build those relationships. And if you look at the data of all the schools in our city, all of them are below the state average of 66%, what I would argue isn't great either. But if you argue that they're much lower than what our state average is, it's even more impactful. So next slide, please. Thanks, Jenna. So what does this look like? Here's the structure or the framework that I talked about. We're asking our big three, Brandywine, Christine, and Red Clay, who have buildings and schools in the city, to volunteer, to partner with us to build this together by using MOUs to create the framework and the verbiage around how this framework would work. But again, having them at the table to build this with us, that this partnership would include a advisory board or a partnership board or a trustee board that would oversee and put a hyper focus on the city of Wilmington. One of the things I've said repeatedly is that all of the school boards of those three boards, all good people, all with the intentions of doing what's right by children, in my opinion. And I think that this is not a blame game, but more a capacity issue. And so when issues and concerns happen, that board is charged to look at those issues district-wide. Well, when you look at that just by raw percentages by the representation on the board, we're talking somewhere between 14 and 28% of the board is representing the city, where the rest of that is overseeing the suburbs. And so when those issues happen, you're oftentimes the issues that are slightly different for those schools in the city oftentimes get overlooked, again, not intentionally, but by capacity issues. One of the things I think it's important for everyone to hear is that this is not a state takeover. This is a partnership, a coalition of the willing, asking them to partner with us to build something together. It includes a staff, a small staff that would oversee the day-to-day operations and then report back to that board. The board will be made up of the superintendents of the participating districts, those board members that reside, that oversee those districts in the city, and then also community members, teachers, meaning former teachers and community members that we're gonna, again, only focus on the city of Wilmington. Next slide, please. Thank you, Jenna. So what could this look like? Again, we're starting with elementary and middle schools. You'll hear either John Sheehan or I talk about the high school component later. I just don't remember which slide it's on at this point, but this is a participation that's voluntary. And I've said it maybe even earlier today, that we've spent a lot of time in education doing a lot of things for and to people and not with people. So we want this to be with people. I talked about that small staff that would concentrate on the city, but more importantly, collaborate. When I was the principal of Mount Pleasant, I was fortunate that we implemented professional learning communities before it was a mandate by the state, and I saw the impact that they had on our content areas. And so all of our math teachers free for the period today to be able to plan together, to be able to look at their data together. We then, once it went to a state initiative, and doing that across our district, where on a certain day, we called them super PLCs, where the math department for the entire district was meeting for 90 minutes to plan, look at the data across the different schools. Imagine taking that same, just that same model and implementing that across the city of Wilmington and looking at best practices. Someone mentioned earlier, and maybe it was Dr. Hollick, I don't recall, talking about common curriculum. I think that it's not necessarily a common curriculum, but common goals and concerns around culturally responsive, right? So because the city of Wilmington is missing, shorthanded in that culturally responsive education. So professional learning around culturally responsive that we implement not in lieu of the curriculum, but it's infused into the curriculum. Empowering educators. I've said it twice already, but building this opportunity for teachers to be able to have input into decision-making. And when I say teachers, that includes community members, parents. I think we've got to build this together and take information that they think they need or know that they need, as opposed to putting in things that we think that they need. It gives us an opportunity to be flexible around time, around who we hire, how we hire them, how we use them. Dr. Hollick mentioned enrichment programs, whether it's before school, after school, during school. We're certainly not looking to extend the day for those folks who are working extremely hard, but more change how we use the time that we have them. I've already talked about the collaboration, and I mentioned before, and I think it's worth repeating, schools will remain in their district. This is not a takeover. They're still going to be in the district that they currently reside in. And so this is, again, a chance for us to partner together to build this community of high-powered folks with a hyper-focus on the city of Wilmington. Next slide, please. At this time, I'm going to turn it over to my partner in crime, John Sheehan.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. So one of the things we've really taken seriously in this effort is that of community engagement. This is not an exhaustive list of everyone we've spoken to, but we have held, I think, over 130 meetings, Zooms, calls at this point, and have really appreciated the engagement of so many folks. As I think Vince can tell you, this PowerPoint in Wally has changed, and it continues to evolve based on the feedback that we get. This is not the same presentation that was given over the fall. As we get more information, more feedback and engagement from the educators that we speak with, the families we speak with, the students we speak with, the community leaders we speak with, the more that this evolves and starts to take shape. So really enjoyed the community engagement. I have been out knocking on doors over some of the recent weekends, talking to families. We held public meetings at Pulaski, Warner, Harlan, and Bancroft, and Vince was at, I believe, 3 of the 4 of those. We have held virtual town halls. There was a Spanish town hall 2 nights ago that Jim and the governor participated in. We held a town hall with the Delaware PTA. We held a virtual visit that I would highly encourage folks, if you haven't seen it, if you go to de.gov/WLC, you can find all of these resources. And it was a 4-hour virtual visit. I really think it's worth your time if you have the time to hear from models that are similar to this. We heard from educators, from union leaders, from school leaders, from community members about how this has enabled them to support educators and students. So we've really taken this piece seriously, and we'll continue to do as much community engagement as we can. Next slide. So a few of these slides are a result of that feedback. So one of the things that we wanted to make clear is that we've heard that additional resources are necessary. We agree, and that when the governor presents his budget next week, it will include $14 million for disadvantaged students. This is in addition to a number of the commitments made last year through the increase in opportunity funding, House Bill 100 and K-3. This is in addition to that, and half of this is gonna go towards putting the Reading Consortium's recommendations into the operating budget. And the other half is gonna go to schools that join the collaborative. I've heard loud and clear from particularly the educator calls and town halls that we've done that additional staff and particularly more paras in classrooms would be a really important thing for folks right now. I've heard from educators that before and after care and extended day programs, again, partnering with community groups are really important. These are some of the things we've heard. A lot of these decisions, again, are going to be made, as Jim said, by educators and leaders and families who are closest to our students. Next slide. Another thing that we heard loud and clear was about the timeline. We obviously have a great sense of urgency because children are in classrooms every single day. With that said, we heard from a lot of folks that they agree with starting the work now, but the timeline that we had presented was a little bit too compressed. And so our ask right now is that we're working with the school boards and hoping that they first vote to move forward with exploring the collaborative, and then we work through creating the structure, and then hopefully this spring we get a final vote approving it, which really kind of then sets the work in motion. And in that first year is really going to be a planning year, getting continued stakeholder engagement, continued family engagement, educator engagement as we continue to build this. We don't want to wait to put supports in place, though, which is why the governor is going to come forward with this additional funding. And then working on what are a few of the things that we can do next year. I mentioned additional staffing. Dr. Holodick mentioned some of that extended day and enrichment programming. So there are a few things that we can start to put in place immediately while we continue to build this out. And then the following year, really beginning fuller implementation. And Jim mentioned some of the really great things we can do around unified professional learning and really targeting our focus on these children, these schools, these educators, these communities. Next slide. Another thing that we heard loud and clear was, as Jim mentioned, that there's a lot of interest in what happens after eighth grade. And we heard a lot of feedback that we have to not solve this all at once, but we have to include this as a part of the conversation. So we're really thinking about it kind of in two phases. One as a short term as we look to implement bridge programs, and Jim being a former high school principal, I think is a huge asset on this front. And also looking at high school placements, we've had good conversations with Newcastle County VOTEC about Howard, which is right there in the city and has additional space for students who wanna stay in the city and wanna go the VOTEC route. Beautiful campus, just had, I think, $100 million upgrade in the past few years. And then also convening stakeholders and community leaders in the Reading Consortium around that long-term high school strategy. The high school piece is something we could probably hold an entire meeting on its own about, but it's a really complicated issue, and it's something that we agree we need to take a look at. We're knocking on doors over by Pulaski in Hedgeville, and the governor, Jim, and I, and Kevin Kelly, and Kevin was telling us that those students in that area are actually zoned to go to Glasgow, which is not very close. And so looking at what we can do to better support students and families in the city when they get to high school. Next slide. And final slide. So just a reminder, sort of what's going on now is we're asking school board to take two separate votes. The first initial one is to vote to formally explore this partnership with us and to begin to develop these MOUs, create this framework, and then a second vote to later on when this is approved or when this is created to approve them. And I think I saw in the participants that Monica Moriak from Christina is on the meeting. Monica has been at a ton of meetings, watched the virtual visit, has been a really great partner. And the Christina board was the first board to take a vote, and they voted unanimously to proceed with working through this and exploring this partnership. So we expect Brandywine and Red Clay to vote in early February. So that is it. We talked at folks a lot. Hopefully this was helpful information. And I think, you know, Dr. Holodick, Jim, and I would love to hear from folks. Certainly happy to answer questions, but also hear feedback and suggestions, because again, this is something that we want to continue to build and reflect the feedback of stakeholders and experts. So thanks for letting us present to you, and happy to have a conversation. Dr. Holodick, I don't know if you want to punctuate anything that was said before we turn to questions.
Thanks, John. I would I'll just let the state board know that over the course of the past few months, I've had the opportunity to watch these presentations in various settings, primarily at board meetings, but also in other meetings. And even as recently as last night, I think it was last night, John. No, it was two nights ago. Pardon me. John and I presented to the Friends of the Christina School District this very PowerPoint, and it is a plan that I support. In my presentation at the Newcastle County Combined School Board meetings today, trying to keep this short, I've been asked or someone asked, I can't remember which, like what's your basic rationale or excitement behind it? And for me, it's rather simple and straightforward, and that is, I believe our urban schools really need to be hubs in the community. And that's not to say that many, if not all of them, aren't to an extent hubs of the community, but there really needs to be, in my opinion, far many more connections being made between outside organizations, between the districts with collaboration, wraparound services, not just for students, but for their families. I think it needs to start much earlier. And I mentioned earlier in this meeting, the real need for quality after school summer planning and opportunities for those kids. That's a short, simple answer. There's certainly a lot more to it, as you just saw in this presentation. But I do think urban schools are different. And I think the data around the performance of our city schools speaks for itself. And it is high time we do something about it. And I really like this plan. So thank you, John.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. I'm going to just open it up directly. As I said, I know some of the board members have already seen this. They may have already had a dialogue with you about it, but I'm just going to open it up to the full board. So any questions or comments that board members would like to share?
Madam President, It's Lo Fink. Just real quick, first of all, I want to commend the governor, Mr. Simmons, and John Sheehan for the great job they did with the community meetings in town. This governor is amazingly committed to making this thing work, and I want to commend him for that also. One thing, though, that I feel is missing is if you take a look at the turbulence or the instability of our city charters. It's not a random shot at charters or anything like that, but obviously I believe that we'd be much better off if we could draw them into this Wilmington Learning Collaborative. That is the city charter schools. So I don't know where we are on that or what the prognosis or possibilities of doing that, but I do think that would really be vital. And in line with that, we are going to be talking about Eastside Charter a little bit later on when we talk about the major modifications. Thank you.
So Vince, thank you for that. And certainly we've spoken at a number of times. And again, I think John mentioned that you had attended some of those meetings. So we're not excluding the charters. I think when we first started, this speaks to John's speaking about how we've adapted the presentation. I think they heard me use an example of a common curriculum that would reduce the impact of that those transient populations. And so that was a concern for the charters who are built around a curriculum at times. And so you've now heard me frame that in terms of common professional development, cultural responsive education, and to build that into the curriculum that you're using. On that list that John talked about, we met with the charter leads again. We met with Aaron Bass at Eastside Charter, Sally Maldonado, Nate Durant. I'm having a brain freeze on the principal at Charter School of Newcastle, and then also with Fieri and Kumba Academy. We've met with them all, Thomas L. And there is a different level of interest now. So while we're still not listing them in the presentation, we're still engaging them with the opportunity for them to participate as well. I think more than 50% of the students in the city are attending charter schools. So to not include them we'd be remiss. So again, this is we're building this with that input from them. They gave us some input. We've adapted that to try to change it and reframe it so that they feel more comfortable and willing to participate.
Thank you. That's helpful.
This is Audrey Noble. Could I just piggyback on some of these issues? And I have a question. I mean, I concur with Vince and what Jim's saying. I mean, the problems that you're focused on related to the schools in Christina and Red Clay and Brandywine are definitely, you know, evident in the charter schools as well in the city. And with that high percentage of students in the charter schools, I can't understand why from the very beginning they weren't part of the conversation. And I guess, you know, what you're talking about is talking with principals. Are you planning to have their boards take similar actions as you're asking of the boards for Red Clay and Christina and Brandywine to look for participation from them?
So one of the conversations we had recently was an ask to set up meetings with their boards to sort of brief them. So I think that's a next step that we've made ourselves available for, you know, if and when they want that presentation. So that's the first step before sort of gauging. But yeah, it was interesting. Sort of at the beginning, there was not a lot of interest. And then sort of as this has changed and evolved, and now obviously with the resources in there, I think folks see that and are taking sort of a second look.
Okay. I guess I'd just like to ask one other question. Are you planning, and this is coming from my background and my career,
Audrey, before you're still muted.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, if you want to repeat that. Audrey, we've lost you again.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Now we can.
Yes, yes.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
Is there a plan in place to evaluate this initiative? And are you having discussions with people at the very beginning as far as the evaluation? I've looked at some of the empowerment zone plans around the country that I know that, you know, the governor was interested in Springfield, and I've talked with, and I think that's a critical point, especially if you're going to be planning changes, and it's important that you have data to inform those changes, that as soon as this planning starts, it becomes concrete, that you have some evaluation people in there to help that planning of the evaluation to track. I mean, you're talking about investing a lot of money, you're having very high expectations. I think an evaluation is going to be really important. It's something I think some people don't think about until it's too late. You know, 2-3 years down the road, they say, oh, we should have evaluated this. Well, you need to think about it at the beginning. So
absolutely agree with that.
Okay.
This is Brittingham. I have a question on the teacher retention data. I'm looking at it, and the numbers are shocking, to say the least. I mean, that's no time to build relationships with your students or buy into a school, but what is your plan to reverse this trend in the retention? The recruitment's going to be hard enough, but the retention is critical also.
So yeah. I'll start, and anyone else, either Dr. Haldick or, excuse me, Mark or John can jump in. So one of the things we look at is when staff leave buildings, the department conducts what we call a mobility survey and looks at the reasons why those staff are either leaving that building or leaving the profession. And what we found through that data is roughly 72-75% of staff are leaving because of leadership. And so one of the things we talked about earlier in the expanded presentation was some of that professional development being around the leaders of those buildings. The second part I would add to that is, not only should we talk about why are teachers leaving, why aren't we talking to the teachers who have stayed and find out what's the reason for them staying and trying to help them. We talk about incentives, and I'm not saying that incentives won't help, but what we haven't heard is that staff are leaving for financial purposes, right? And so if in fact it's not the financial piece, then let's find out what it is that will hold them there and keep them there as well. So that's a start, but if, when you think about 72% rationale or explanation for leaving is around leadership or policies and practices, I think we've got to take a big look at those things.
Yeah, and Jim, if I can add another thing, and I see in the participants that that Deb Stevens from DSEA is on. I had the great fortune of having a presentation that DSEA arranged with NEA and with a woman named Andrea Walker around shared decision making and the power that shared decision making has had in just like our neighboring New Jersey around engaging teachers, involving them in decisions, and the impact that that had on teacher retention, school climate, and student achievement. And in that virtual visit that I referenced, we were fortunate enough to have Andrea come back and do that presentation. And I think it was really one of the highlights of the visit and the data that she presents about, it was like 98% of teachers want decision-making ability at their district level, 97% at their school level. And the way that the model has closed the gap in retention between high-need schools and non-high-need schools is really powerful. So Jim talked about the leadership in PD, the really sharing decision-making and empowering those who are in front of teachers and leveraging their expertise, folks like Wendy, who I co-signed all of Mark's nice things and then some, engaging them and having them at the table for key school-based decisions has shown to improve retention. So we're excited about that. That possibility is a really great step as well.
Hi, it's Wendy Turner.
Go ahead, Wendy.
Thank you. I was going to focus on the burnout issue as well. So I appreciate the presentation in totality. It is great work. Thank you, Mr. Simmons. I'm really interested to hear about that. I was going to say, what are the drivers of leaving? What are the root causes? And I was expecting to hear burnout as a big driver, but this leadership idea is really interesting. So to focus on that and have that be such a large piece of the puzzle is, that's vision right there. I also, when I think about questions in my role on the board, I always try and zoom out and look at all the different parts of our system and how they talk to each other. And so in looking at how we can better support Wilmington schools, I think it, you know, we could, it may be useful to look at the different systems that support teachers, our state mentoring system, our PD system, our clock hour renewal system. Should those look different for city schools? And even looking at the profile of teachers who've left, what is their clock hour training been like, right? So can you just kind of classify that into curriculum instruction assessment versus whole child support versus even technology and start to piece a few more pieces of the puzzle together and say, what refinements can we make to these systems to support these teachers in these spaces?
So Wendy, so first, nice to see you again. I haven't seen you in some time now, but so thank you for saying that, because in the expanded presentations that we've given over time, I talked about some of those things that we have, for lack of a word, cookie cutter mentoring system that we have new staff go into. And I think that it has to look different for staff that are in the city of Wilmington. I think the supports that they need have to look much different. So I'm having ongoing conversations with John Neubauer in educator support around what does the mentoring piece look like and what can we do differently. I think to be able to do that, it can't come from John and his team. I think it has to come from those teachers to say, what is it that you need? I'll say this in terms of how valuable I think mentoring is. I was fortunate that when I became a principal at Mount Pleasant, and I'll tell you, being an assistant principal didn't help much, right? I was fortunate that we were transitioning a superintendent out, and Andy Brandenberger became my one-on-one mentor. And so I believe I grew exponentially faster than other principals because I had that luxury of having him. So I think we've got to look at what does mentoring look like so that those teachers in the city can grow exponentially in their opportunities as well. So you're spot on. We've talked about it already. It's ongoing conversations on what that will look like, because it does look different. We talk about the trauma that all kids, we were talking about ACEs long before the pandemic. The pandemic has added another layer of trauma to all students, but certainly students in the city. And then you look at the crime and the poverty that they're living with. And but also would add that we've got to look at what's the social emotional support that we're providing for those teachers that are helping to support those kids. So Terry Lawler, who serves on my team at the department, is leading that work statewide, but making sure that when that small staff that we talked about, one of those positions was dedicated to the social emotional behavioral well-being of not only the kids, but of the staff as well.
Thank you so much for that. That's great to hear. I think coaching will be instrumental beyond the typical roles that we see ELA and math coaches. I think you could really have SEL coaches that are inserted strategically that can build that adult SEL capacity, all the work that Terry does. And then even thinking, what do we learn from this process? And then how could we refine or remake the cookie cutter approach even for our rural schools, right? Like, how can we take the learning here and apply it to the system as we work to meet the needs of students and teachers? That retention question is always a goal around the state. Thank you so much.
And again, the same thing that you just said, we've said in other meetings when people have said, after you get this in, we said, start small, get it right, refine it, and then expand it, right? Not only expand it to include more school students, folks from the city, but expand it out to all of our schools in the state, county, et cetera. So yeah, spot on. We've talked about that again at different times when that question comes up.
I would simply add that everything I just heard, I fully agree with, and I put in the chat. I think engaging the teachers who are in those particular schools to help define all of that will get a great deal of buy-in. But I also think when I mentioned the word innovation, I'm thinking, how do you attract teachers into high-need schools? I think we need to look at scholarships, tuition reimbursement, career ladder, the kind of positions we're talking about, being that they come with additional responsibilities, should come with additional pay, which ties into that, you know, career ladder piece and really energizes educators. So I'm certainly all for everything we're describing, but I also think systems changes. There's a real opportunity to look at, you know, using some of the resources, additional resources that'll be in those schools with these teacher councils and such. I really want to hear what the teachers have to say about, you know, their future colleagues. How do you attract teachers coming out of residencies to high need schools and keeping them there, right? So I think all of that combined has the potential to, you know, to address Vice President Brittingham's question. Keep not only attracting but retaining those teachers in those schools is going to take a multi-pronged approach is my answer.
I have a couple of follow-ups, I guess, to that, and kind of thinking specifically to what you just said. So one is the cohort of teachers that are going into these schools different than are going into some the others. So do you have sort of an inherent bias in terms of that they might not stay because, you know, they're younger teachers, or just trying to think, are they all coming in at the same playing field or level playing field when you look at this data relative to other schools, would be my first question. The second is looking at the leadership. So if the vast majority of teachers are quoting that they're leaving because of leadership, what does the turnover in leadership look like? So are you having a similar level of leadership, and what kind of professional development is there for leadership to improve that? And I'm hearing that because I actually think mentoring, kind of to your point, Jim, that was really valuable for you. I mean, we can always learn by people who have done things before us and by those around us. And then my last question, which I think is spot on, which is, why are people staying? Right, like that was such a great point. So not just focusing on why people are leaving, but what is it that's valuable that people want to stay? So I think that's a great point. But the first two were just kind of broader questions.
John, I'm happy to take a stab here at one of them, being that I was doing a good bit of coaching, through the University of Delaware in our schools. Whitney, so the state currently has grant monies that's going toward what's called the principal pipeline. This is work led by Michael Saylor in partnership with University of Delaware right now. And it is three districts and one charter school who are going through a just completed rather self-evaluation, and now they're beginning planning around principal pipelines. How do you identify early those educators who have a real interest and skill set to back that interest in leading schools? And then how do you, in looking at the needs of a school, ensure that you pair that the right skill set to the right building? And then how do you keep them there? I don't know this as a fact. I want to answer which I think was your very first question around, like teachers leaving and also administrators leaving. I don't have any data on it, but I'm pretty sure, maybe Dr. Noble can chime in here because I'm sure she's looked at this over at some point or another. I'm sure the numbers are very similar. Urban schools tend to turn over principals. The churn is much greater than it is in your suburban schools and more affluent, let's say, communities. That's a problem. It only exacerbates the issue with teachers, which is inconsistency with leadership, right? And the teachers do tend to be more novice and younger in urban schools because as they get more tenure, and they're not novice and they have an opportunity to voluntarily transfer to a different school that's, let's say, not a high need school, or perhaps it's still high needs, but not just in the city, they often do so. So there are a lot of contributing factors. But I think at the heart of that is something Wendy Turner mentioned earlier, and that is they're just burnt out. I mean, you can probably describe it in a number of different ways. They're just burnt out. Because it is full on. I mean, any elementary school is full on from the start of the day to the end of the day. It's incredibly hard work. But in high need schools, it's just that much more challenging, right? And so I think educators, teachers, and leaders sort of look around and say, where might I be able to do this where I'm not burnt out? So I hope that answers your questions.
Right.
It does. Thank you.
There's been quite a bit of national research for decades about why teachers and educators, including principals, leave schools. And there are two major reasons, and they have not changed ever. And all the time I've been following this research. The one is leadership, just as you've already put your finger on, principal leadership, having a leader that understands teaching, that can back up the teachers and be supportive. The second is working conditions. And all those things that you're talking about, challenges in urban schools, are contributing to difficult working conditions. And I really think like this is an opportunity for us not to just kind of retrofit a system, but to really look at how can we change the working conditions to professionalize education to keep good teachers there, because they get burnout because they don't have enough time. They have too many assignments. They're dealing with too many problems. And until we get at that core of changing the working conditions, we're just going to keep putting band-aids on this issue and band-aids on it. So I'm hoping at some point in time that we're going to have some creative thinking about, because the things that you hear teachers and educators say, why I want to go be this working conditions. It's about they don't have support of the principal, they don't have supplies, but just basic things. They don't have any time. You know, elementary schools, as Mark just said, from the beginning of the day till the end of the day, they're constantly, you know, on. And of course you don't burn people out. And add to that the challenges of cities and problems with the trauma and other things. I really think the working conditions issue is something that we've not really strategically looked at. We've looked at leadership. We have a plan about leadership, but this whole other context, the whole culture of a school is critical. And I think time is central. So I just want to put my two, but this is research has been here for a long, long time. And, you know, we should learn this lesson by now.
This is Reverend Powell. If I could jump in, you were finished, Dr. Noble. Okay. Jim and John, I want to thank you for coming tonight and for being your champion along with the governor with this initiative. I really thoroughly support it. I had an opportunity to watch virtually on your town hall meeting at Warner. And I think Jim was there and I think the governor was there and he expressed that, you know, they really gave him a hard time on that evening, and they were very candid, and they really talked about the issues that they were facing from the education and from the principals. So, and I guess I wanted to kind of chime in from the grassroots community perspective, where I kind of was my lens in terms of where I think I contribute to the board. I think what, in essence, when we're forming this collaborative in Wilmington, it appears that we're really trying to build community. We're really building community like we used to have in the Wilmington school system. We had one district and everything. You would see the same people at your churches. You would see the same people at your schools. You see the same individuals at your community centers. And so I think the secret sauce perhaps in this whole model, along with education and educator retention and all, is the grassroots community. And how do we surround and support the children and such that we are creating a better working condition, if you would, for parents' engagement and those type of things. So the actual funds and resources, I haven't really heard a lot. I've heard a lot about engagement, and you've done a great job with great engagement. But as we roll out, we have to further make sure that community is engaged, and also your civic associations, your churches, your community centers that are providing after school, before school, a support for the young people, I think is important also. So I know you have your challenges with governance and all those pushback and your timeline. Thank you for being amenable and adjusting to that. But I would hope you don't lose track of the, I think, the, as I say, the secret sauce is grassroots. Is really at the street level, the core street level. One of the recommendations in the Southbridge Civic Associate 10-year plan was to, since we did lose our school in Southbridge over Palmer, but was to hire a community education ambassador, someone who would be just laser focus on educational issues in the Southbridge community, be a coordinating for all the facilities with the Department of Education, all the initiatives, there's so many things that are going on. So that position perhaps could even be layered across the Wilmington and just make your city of Wilmington, I guess the city government, I imagine would be on this board. They're chomping at the bits to try to help support, you know, education in the community. So I just think that in my closing remark, I just think that we just need to make sure that we are kind of very informed and focused on what's happening on the ground. It's kind of like what Mr. Rushton talked about, how he met the current secretary in the community. And I think that's important. So
if I could just quickly respond to that, Reverend Powell. And so again, nice seeing you again. We are having those conversations. Again, one of the conversations I had and that we've noticed when I do these meetings, and so John Sheehan mentioned that we've done over 130. I don't think he counts the ones that I'm having one-on-one, right? So when I talk to Michelle Taylor, who says that the United Way of Delaware has a partnership with Red Clay, but not necessarily one with Brandywine. And then the Powell Center on Market Street has a relationship with Brandywine, but not so much with Christine or Red Clay. So I've been trying to have those conversations, say that we can get to this collaborative. Not only can we get the folks in education to collaborate across those district lines, we can get those nonprofits and those community-based organizations to do the same. And so that we're not being redundant in the things that we're offering, but we're partnering to do those things together. You're exactly right around the city of Wilmington. As a matter of fact, on Monday, I believe, I don't have my calendar open, I'm going to the mayor's meeting to talk about how we can tie this initiative to some of his initiatives. So those things are in the works. Again, what you may have heard the governor say, and I know that I've said it as well, people want some details, and we know that the devil is in the details, but then we'd be becoming with a prescribed plan versus a collaborative. So it's hard. I'm going to say it's a rub where do we come with information that we thought about and then we're giving something to people, or do we come willing to hear and listen? I have notebooks full of notes from the different meetings that we take back and then different side meetings that we're having that I need to get John to add to our list and get us closer to 150.
Yeah, I did hear that at Warner also. So that's great to be sensitive. One last point, and I'll be brief, but someone mentioned trauma-informed practice and the SEL and those types of things. That's so important. An incident that happened, we partnered with the United Way, my church, and we have an after-school program with Urban Promise. and an unfortunate incident happened where we had a shooting in the community. And the shooting, there were about 6 bullets, unfortunately, that entered into my church while my after-school program was in place. And so while the bullets stopped, the trauma did not. And so one of the young people kind of refused now to come back to the after-school program. We connected them with victim services for trauma-informed practice. And one of the young boys are now struggling not even to want to go back to school. So all of that is, you know, what we're dealing with, you know, at the grassroots level in the street. And so it's probably no secret, but I've seen it firsthand, and it's an impactful. So we really have to kind of be laser focused on that. So I'm just leave that out there.
This is Phil Harris. I was just wondering, so you talked a little bit, we've talked a little bit about how the teacher turnover has affected the teachers and how, like, what may be causing that. Have you guys done anything to connect students with mental health facilities and the teachers who are leaving to see, like, especially in these high risk areas, mental health is a large part of the community. And I was wondering if you have planned on partnering with any organizations or any nonprofits that center around this.
Yeah, I'll start. Shelby, thanks so much for the question. I think one of the most helpful things that we've done in all of this engagement is go door knocking. And when you get to talk to students, you know, at their homes and hear from them, and you know, I'm a former fifth grade teacher, and you know, students tell like it is, and you hear the truth from them, and we've been really fortunate to engage students at the door, and one of the things we heard was the stress, you know, in non-pandemic times, let alone pandemic times, and you know, one of the things that I think this presents an opportunity, and Jim and Mark really hit on it, as well as members of the board, is to create schools that are community hubs with those wellness services on site. And so, you know, you don't have to go, you know, blocks away, miles away, but having those mental and behavioral health folks on site, having wellness services on site. And we have a few models of that. Colonial and Eisenberg Elementary comes to mind as a really great one. And so taking those services from elsewhere and bringing them right under the roof of a school so that educators can, you know, can access them and students can access them is something that I think this model hopefully gives rise to, providing as much support as possible. And I'll brag about Deb as well, who's on the line, and the work that she's done for educators at Bancroft, and hearing the need for a specific designated area of Bancroft where educators can go, and it's a calming and peaceful and serene place. And I just think, like, there's so much opportunity to bring this all under one roof of the school. So that's what excites me about this initiative, that we really have an opportunity to create true community hubs with wraparound services.
Thank you. I appreciate the steps you guys are taking to fully consider what the students and teachers need and also, like, want, and what they're vocalizing to you guys.
This is Wally Rushton. Just very briefly, I want to first give a shout out to Jim and John. It's great to see you both, and I just want to applaud you for all of your work. I was the beneficiary, as you alluded to one of the 150 or so that you're approaching, or two, I can't recall, but I know that I've been the beneficiary of the intentionality that you've been into, that you've put into building stakeholder engagement, and obviously we all recognize the importance of that. A lot of my colleagues have already covered some of the points that I was interested in from the presentation, particularly around teacher retention. And the only point that I'll make about that is that I think that the issue of leadership and development, and coupled with, I don't think anyone, even though it wasn't the primary driver, pay is never irrelevant. And I think that even relates to my own profession in law. We've seen a lot of attrition amongst our ranks, and the number one reason was not necessarily because of pay, but because people didn't feel like there was enough pouring into them to develop them as leaders. It was an unsatisfactory experience. So I think that's just very telling about where we need to really focus our attention on. And I love some of the ideas that I heard come out. So my question is, not to be a drag on the conversation, but I'm interested in hearing about some of the challenges that you've heard, some of the pushback that you've received from stakeholders, from the key parties that you've engaged to be a part of the collaborative. You mentioned that Christiana has already come on board in a very direct and excited way, but I'm wondering what you may see, what you may anticipate as potential barriers or feedback you've gotten on the collaborative and how you intend to address it. And then the second part of my inquiry is about bandwidth, right? I've heard a tremendous amount of interest in this, and this is an innovative idea. This is a new idea, but I also recognize right now there's a tremendous bandwidth issue. People are you know, Mark, it's hard for me. My mother, I'm a yes ma'am, yes sir guy. You greet people by their title, so it's going to take me a while. But Mark, as he mentioned earlier, like the pandemic is front and center, and that's consuming so much financial, mental, physical, spiritual attention. So how are you dealing with the bandwidth issue to still allow people to want to be innovative and engage in this conversation?
It's two great questions. And Wally, it's great to see you again. I think they're both related, frankly. And I think I must look at the bandwidth piece from a different lens, which is, I would argue educators in the city need our support more right now, you know, than ever before. And so it's this model is predicated on bringing those supports to the school level. And so you're absolutely right. Educators are doing a phenomenal job right now. And as Jim had said, we can't ask them to do any more. And that's why I think it's incumbent on all of us to hear them, hear what they need, and, you know, address it with additional supports. I think some other feedback, I don't know, I'll take the optimistic view, not necessarily pushback, but feedback. Some of it we addressed. Some of it was, you know, the timeline, the not including the high school piece, being a little bit vague about the resources. So we worked to clarify that. Yeah, I think one of the things you sort of hit on, which is this is new and this hasn't been tried in Delaware. There are successful models across the country, but it's new in Delaware. And as Jim had mentioned, we've deliberately taken the approach that it shouldn't be Jim Simmons, Mark Holliday, Governor Carney, and John Sheehan providing details. It should be the folks who are on the ground. But sometimes it's hard to, when you present and people have questions, say, you know, we want you to help build that and not provide answers. And sometimes I think folks either feel like we don't have a plan or we have a plan that we're not sharing. And the truth is, you know, we want to bring forward this framework and we want to collaboratively build it with people. But sometimes that can be kind of, it's a needle that's hard to thread sometimes. Jim, is there anything else you would share that you think we've heard consistently?
No, I think the timeline.
Jim, I think we lost you, or at least I did.
It's a classic when you don't answer the question, you just, you freeze the computer. Mark, jump in.
I was just going to say, I'd only add that I think it has helped that the governor and you and Jim have been incredibly patient, and you've been on the receiving end of some frustration by educators, understandably, and you've listened and you've incorporated what you've heard into this plan already, and that has been helpful. I mean, I've seen the transformation of the plan and your slide deck here that incorporates what you've heard in meetings in schools with teachers. And I think that's building a level of trust. But what Wally mentions is reality, and that is people are struggling. And so the idea of change, even though what we're suggesting would, you know, the expectation is it's going to improve things, right? The quality of life, so to speak, and in your profession should, you know, pretty quickly improve, and certainly improve over the course of a couple of years. But that's very hard to see in the middle of COVID. And that has been a challenge for all of us, but especially you, Jim, and the governor to this point.
This has been a really good dialogue. I think you've most board members. I'm trying to look at my list, and now I only have five people across the top of my screen, so I can't see everyone. But I want to make sure that everyone has had a chance, and this will not be the last time that we'll have this dialogue. So to the extent that, you know, we go home, we think we have more questions, I am 100% sure that we'll be hearing more on this and lots of opportunities to continue to ask questions. So before we move on, anything else from board members? Okay, I'm going to take that silence to be nothing else at this time. And I really want to thank both John and Jim, and actually, and I agree with Wally, because it is really hard not to refer to you as secretary, but I'm going to do my best. But thank you as well, because it was, you know, certainly all three of you so informed on this, and really appreciate the dialogue. I know I am always learning when I hear from people that present in front of us, and this is certainly an issue that I think is at top of mind for everyone, particularly some of the mental health issues, as I talked to, you know, kind of as Mark was pointing out, with his wife being a teacher and seeing kids in public schools, is it's even a more challenging situation over the last couple of years, and certainly more so for the city. So with that, thank you all. Appreciate you being here tonight, and we'll move on to the section on charter schools.
Thank you all. I lost you for a minute. So I know that I said some great things, and it sounds like Whitney did the same thing. So, but thank you for the opportunity. I lost you guys for about 5 minutes.
We figured, you know, when you don't know the answer, this is what John said. You're like, oh, I froze. I'm sorry. But we know you knew the answers. Clearly knew all the answers. So thank you very much again. And I know we'll be seeing you again. So thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. So next on the agenda is charter schools. And I think actually a lot of great questions were actually raised by board members, specifically when we kind of think about looking at charter schools and their place across the whole landscape of education in our state. So there were some great questions, which I know as we go through some of these modifications, as I said, or I think it was Vince that pointed out, some of these are actually on our agendas coming up. So let's move on to that section. So we actually do get a written report provided by the Charter School Office in advance of this meeting. We do have Kim Klein, Associate Secretary, Operations Support from the Department of Education on the line. So does anyone have any specific questions for Ms. Klein about the report that was submitted? And if not, we're just going to go right in. There's a lot on the agenda with respect to a lot of new charter school applications and any kind of modifications. So anything for Ms. Klein before we go into specifics?
I just have one. Of course, it's by Great Oaks. You know, in the meeting in December, you told me, because I'm still concerned about the teacher issue there and the teacher certification levels, that 82% of the teachers are full or have emergency or pending certifications. I was on the, I just want to get an explanation about this. I was looking at the description for our administrative secretary on the job postings website that we have, and I noticed that Great Oaks has 20 job postings on there, and about 15 of them are teachers, and they were postings that were initiated last summer. Do you know what the status of that is? I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me if they seem to be moving their staff in the direction they need to be.
Thanks for the question, Audrey. I'm not sure. Are you referring to Frontline, the application?
Frontline. Uh-huh.
Okay, so yeah. I'm not sure. It could be that they just have positions posted kind of ongoing so that they can build a candidate pool. As you know, our districts and our charter schools have had some challenges recruiting. Right. Staffing. And so it could be that they have just placed job positions out there, like I said, to build a candidate pool for future opportunities and vacancies. I can certainly circle back with the school and ask that question and get some more information to bring back to you.
Yeah, that would be great, because I noticed that in your report, you said you were going to meet with them on the 24th, right? Yeah. So if you could follow up with that and get back to me, I'd appreciate it.
Will do. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions specifically for Ms. Klein? And I know there'll be a lot of questions probably potentially going forward, but specifically about the report that was posted. Okay, so what we're going to move to next is the new charter school applications. And I'm just going to note, this is for information. As everyone knows, this is a bit of a longer process. And the first thing I'm going to say is that we actually are fortunate that we're going to have Vince, Mr. Lofink, to participate in CSAC's process for the Brian Allen Stevenson School, which is one of the ones that will be in front of us as well. And I want to say, hold on, I think, is it thinking of free air? I'm trying to think about, well, okay, I'm going to stay in my order. So so we do have two new charter school applications. So documentation, it is posted for CSAC. That link is available via our eBoard site. So if we kind of look at what the process is over the next couple of months, so February and March, we're going to have our CSAC meetings. We will also have public hearings held. I know Jenna sent out a list of public hearing dates. So to the extent you haven't responded, there are a number of dates that we need coverage for. So please follow up with her and let her know if you can make any of those. I believe at this point in time, they're all virtual. That may change, but again, we really would love to have broader participation at those public hearing meetings. In April, the secretary's decision will come in front of us, and that's the time that we would need to make to take action. Now, I just want to make sure that we remind everyone, I know we've done this several times now, but we have to make our decision on the record that comes before us. So we need to make sure that if there's anything that we want to consider, so any questions, any concerns that you want our board representatives to be able to address, they need to bring it up at CSAC. So we need to do it either at this meeting, at the next meeting. You can always send emails via Jenna or directly to them and copy Jenna as well. But I just want to make sure that that everyone, you know, kind of has that timeline and what we need to do. Now, as I said, we do have Vince, he's going to be participating in CSAC for Brian Allen Stevenson School. You will recall this has already come in front of us once. It's coming in front of us again. And we actually do have Freer as well. And I want to say Dr. Noble is taking that one on for us. So I just want to thank them both because that is a really big time commitment. And we really appreciate their expertise in doing this because they've done it before. And their willingness to do that. So what I'm going to do now, specific to these two schools, is just open up the conversation. So to the extent that there's anything that you want raised, now would be a good time to raise it. To the extent that you go back and you go through all the documents and you come up with additional questions, just make sure that you send them to Vince, to Audrey, and to Jenna in advance of the first meeting. So with that, I'm going to open up to the floor specific to Brian Stevenson, and specifically to free air.
Madam President?
Yes.
I just wanted to point out that for Brian Stevenson, who tabled their application last year, Mr. Rushton was our lead on that.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to point that out, that Mr. Rushton was our lead on Brian Stevenson last year.
Thank you. Apologies, Wally.
No problem at all. But I will note that Vince Lofink was a avid participant in the process. So I actually kind of forgot that I was the lead because you were so involved. So thank you for noting that. But I do have a question. Or because Vince, you were so involved, I think you know what sort of the key points were last year. A lot of them kind of centered on some questions about the financial wherewithal of the school. There were some concerns around, I think, land in the buildings and things of that sort. So my main questions would be revisiting those points, which I have no doubt that they have buttoned up sufficiently on this second turnaround. But obviously, you know, in the absence of knowing that for certain, those are the points that I would want to know. Everything else about their presentation I thought was particularly stellar, but those points were really salient that caused them to table.
No, I think that's, I would echo that. I mean, that was a pretty extensive conversation that we had as a board, and we actually did follow up with specific questions to them. So I have a high level of confidence that they will be addressing them. Vince, did you want to speak to that, or are you just going to take that away?
I feel if there's a specific questions regarding at this moment in time, if we receive something in, obviously it should be sent to Jenna by February 8th. So we would be able, Wally and I would be able to ask the appropriate questions for the Stevenson School. I think that maybe Mr. Travers and or Ms. Klein would certainly have some specific, maybe would give us any more specific information that we would need at this time. But I don't have any additional questions at this time.
Okay. Anyone else? And actually, Vince, just as a follow-up, we'll make sure that you get that letter. But again, as we go through everything, that's the time to be generating these questions.
Right. Right.
Is there anything else that people want to make sure that they raise? Actually, Dr. Noble, I saw you just put your hand up.
Yeah. I reviewed the application and I looked at it again last year, and this is a new issue beyond some of the things that we came up with last year. So I just want to make sure I get it on the radar screen and get it on the record. I noticed in the application that Alana Berry is one of the original founders of Stevenson. And it's unclear from the application what the role in the charter school will be, should it be approved. And I raise this concern because, as all of you probably know, or most of you know, that Ms. Berry is currently a education policy advisor in the governor's office. And it would seem to me that this could pose a conflict of interest, her working in the governor's office and being involved. Whether there's a perceived conflict or it's a genuine conflict, I think that's something that the school should address in their application. Specifically, I'd like them to make clear in their application and have it on record as to what her role will be in the actual running of the school while she's in that job in the governor's office.
And so Audrey,
maybe you already know that, but I don't know.
Yeah, we have definitely had that conversation, and she has recused herself as of her start date with the governor's office in her role with the Brian Allen Stevenson School. And so she has removed herself from that. And we can certainly ask the school on record to talk about that when they come in front of CSAC, if Mr. Lofink would like to put that question on the record. But I can assure you that we have had that conversation.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah, I just think it would be good to have it in the record so that if there's any issues at a later date, we can say it's been addressed in the initial work. So.
Yeah, and Jenna will take that back and to Vince as well to make sure that goes in front of CSAC, because I do agree it needs to be on the record.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, with respect to Freire as well, because this is also on the agenda. And again, this is not the last time you'll have a chance to, but just want to make sure everyone is aware. To Audrey's point, if it's not in the record, it is not a part of our decision. Okay. So with that, I'm going to thank both Vince. Oh, Audrey, did you just raise your hand again?
Yeah, okay. I do. I just want a clarification. You can help me with Kim. Is there a difference between the current Freire Charter School and the new one that they're proposing, other than location? Is everything else going to be the same?
So I'm not sure what you mean by the same. And so they did reach out to the department and inquire about a major modification process versus a new application. So they are requesting a separate new charter for this school in particular.
But is it going to have the same program? Are they planning to replicate their current school? That's what I was kind of confused when I first started looking at the application.
Yeah, and so I've not been through the application fully, and that'll be part of our CSAC process and discussions with the school. Mm-hmm. And so I think those will be good questions for us to ask the school when they come in front of us as a committee, to just maybe expand upon what they have in their application on how the new school may or may not be different from their existing school.
Okay. Can I just ask you a process question? Because it seems like the CSAC procedures have changed since I was on CSAC the last time, when Chuck was leading things. I noticed that the first date when the initial questions have to be delivered to the school occurs before the first CSAC meeting. So can you tell me what the process there is?
Yep. So what we tried to do, we were experiencing overruns in some of our CSAC meetings with a lot of questions. And in some cases, the schools weren't prepared to answer our questions. So what we talked about as a group was giving initial questions to them so they could come prepared. So they might be able to address some of our questions in their 10-minute briefing, but then also that they'd be prepared, they'd have the right people at the table. And in the instance where we might want data or really detailed specific answers, that they would be prepared. That does not preclude us from asking additional questions during the meeting. It's just to try to make the process go more smoothly and give them, you know, upfront knowledge of what the committee
needs. And I think that makes good sense. So do you want me to submit questions from the board to you prior to, so that we can meet that deadline?
Yes, please.
Okay. All right. All right. Thank you.
I think it might be useful as well if we kind of have just a brief revisit of impact, because this is something, because if you know, kind of for those that are on the call listening as a participants, in addition to board members, when we can consider impact in terms of whether it be a new application or major modification. So I don't know, Carla, if you want to take that, or if Ms. Klein or Kim, you want to take that. But I just think it would be valuable, particularly as we're thinking about sort of new schools and the impact on existing schools in the area. So, you know, which one of you wants to answer that? Kim, did you want to go first on that?
Yeah, so impact definitely can be part of the conversation. We have contacted the school districts to request if they have any feedback that they would like to provide for impact. As you know, based on Delaware code, impact cannot be a reason for not approve a standalone reason for not approving a new application. It can be a reason for placing a condition on a school. And so historically, we look at conditions more for renewals. Right, we have a specific thing that we want to address, and we place a condition. I have had some recent conversations about this, and I've been giving some thought to, I'm not sure what a condition around impact might look like for a new school, but that is something for us as a CSAC entity to consider as we go through the review process, that it cannot be a standalone reason for non-approval, but it can be part of a discussion and reason behind any impact or conditions that the committee may want to recommend.
Now, I think that's a great point, because when you think about impact, it's kind of hard to think what would the appropriate condition B, right? Because typically if it's an enrollment issue, that's a trackable thing that you can work to. So just trying to think, you know, if it's there, it's making an impact, you know, like it's hard to think what that might be. So just, you know, something to consider. And actually, I think Jenna just put up in the chat box as well. So to the extent that people have questions about, there is a link in the chat box so people can go take a look at that, because I think it's important that people understand what are some of the factors that the board needs to consider when these decisions come in front of them. So thank you for that explanation. Any other questions or comments?
Madam President, when
I'm sorry,
Ms. Klein just mentioned what could be considered in discussing impact. When you say that, Ms. Klein, are we talking about, my interpretation is you're talking about the board's consideration for voting to affirm the secretary's recommendation. You're not talking about what CSAC's allowed to consider, or are you talking, is it the same thing?
So it's really the same thing. Okay. Because CSAC initiates those conversations. And so typically CSAC would make a recommendation for approval or not, and then conditions or not. And then that recommendation goes forward to the Secretary of Education, who then, if the Secretary of Education is aligned with the recommendations of CSAC, right, then brings it forward to State Board for assent. So there are opportunities CSAC can apply conditions. And certainly, I think when we do that, it makes sense. The State Board has representation at that table. And so it makes sense if we're going to apply conditions that we do, that we begin those recommendations in CSAC with a broader range of input. I think that's just really more transparent and fair to all parties if we have it early on, as opposed to later in the process. But certainly I think that is kind of applicable kind of throughout the process that we'll go.
Thank you.
To that point, at one of our meetings, and I honestly can't remember which one it was, but school districts provided or impacted school districts provided information, but it came very late in terms of making the decision. Again, this is when Chuck was on. And I guess to the extent that school districts are going to be weighing in, the earlier in the process they do, the better. And I don't know if there is a specific timeline by which they need to do that, but I just remember that I think it actually came, and other board members remember this as well. I think it came like the day before or the day of. I mean, it was literally that closest to terms of when we were having that dialogue. So is there a timeline and can that be encouraged?
So in terms, there's not an outlined timeline for us, but we have already requested feedback from our districts. And so I can't speak to the previous time that you're referring to, but we have definitely put it out in advance of the first CSAC in hopes of receiving responses, you know, frankly, prior to CSAC, or if not, certainly prior to the conclusion of CSAC's work.
Okay, thank you. Anything else from board members? And these are specific to, although we're going to have a similar conversation with respect to the major modifications, but Friere and Brian Stevenson.
Yeah, if I could just say something about this impact issue. I know we're talking about impact as it's defined in the regulation. But I think when I've been involved with the charter schools and on CSAC since I got on the board. And, you know, we spent a lot of time as a board on these committees at hearings. And I just feel that, you know, the charter schools are like the one issue that we look at kind of in a silo. Like everything else is like a statewide, we look at it from a statewide perspective, but in regards to charter schools, it's, I guess, I feel like that we spend a lot of time looking at charter schools, it kind of in a criterion reference model. It's like, there's these criteria of things that they have to do and meet, and we judge them against that. So we're talking about one school at a time. And that's inherent in the process. But I think we as a board should start trying to think about this more from a statewide perspective, more systemically. And so, you know, I feel like that it's important that just as Wendy brought up the questions earlier with the Wilmington collaborative about the statewide impact of things. You know, I'm wondering how we can move forward and start looking at impact from the perspective of not just the charter school network, but looking at the charter school network holistically in the state as part of the full educational system. You know, I know, like, for example, the charter school annual report comes out every year, and I really feel like that might be and I read that, and I just feel like it leaves me more questions than I have answers. And I feel like if we might be able to have some good discussions about how can we look at the charter schools in that larger perspective, not just against the criteria of performance as we look at them in a silo, but what do they contribute to this state? How do they impact the other districts? What, you know, what are some of the unintended consequences of the schools? And I just feel like, you know, I'd be happy to assist with that, but I would like to get involved with the key group of people. And I don't think that's CSAC's responsibility. I think it's a larger responsibility of the board or the department, of other players that are concerned about, you know, our public schools, like, what's the role? I mean, I think we're at a point in time, we've had charter schools in our state for a long time. And I think we need to look at their systemic contribution. And instead of this, I mean, I think the model that we have.
Audrey, you've cut out again. Audrey, we missed the last couple minutes of what you just said. Audrey, I don't know. Can you hear us? We missed.
Okay. I'll just wrap this up. I just feel like, you know, when we talk about impact, I think we could be looking at it from a much larger perspective. And I hope that the board would be interested in trying to promote this conversation, you know, and I hope that, you know, we can work with the charter school office and the secretary and looking at the systemic impact of the charter school effort in our state and, you know, how we can improve it, how we can and make better decisions overall. Mr. Lofink?
No, I think that's good. Vince, were you going to say something?
Yes, I agree with everything Dr. Noble's saying, but I think that the main source of direction on this is going to come from legislative hall and not from CSAC or not from the state board. It would have to come from legislative hall, to be very honest with you.
I think in terms of what we can do,
right,
we are bound by code, right? Like, I mean, even to the question with respect to impact and what we can consider, even to the extent that we had a very lengthy conversation, I think at one of our first meetings, and there was the whole conversation about what was in the record and what wasn't, because they had brought something to actually to a meeting, but it wasn't officially in a record. So, and actually, I think we might have been it in one of the Brandywine schools, if I remember correctly. So you may have been there, because I remember that night. So we have very, very clear guidelines in which we have to operate. And so I think, Vince, you're right. I actually think, quite honestly, you're both right, because one, it has to be handled by the legislature, because we operate within boundaries and very clearly outlined guidelines, or parameters, I should say. But to Dr. Nodal's point, and I think when we look at one of the schools that are up for a major modification, it really speaks to that point, because it's getting bigger, it's moving to a different population. I mean, it's a modification, but it really impacts another part of another county. So I think that, or not another county, I'm sorry, another school district. So I think these are really valid questions, you know, certainly worth raising, but in terms of it being addressed and our ability to actually act on something, that would be something from the legislature. But certainly, you know, to the extent that we are getting that question, we are a citizens board. And I think that there were questions in the chat even asking about the impact. So, you know, certainly having a dialogue and bringing it to attention, I think is valuable.
This is Wally Rushton. I just want to add one brief additional point of commentary on that. As a lawyer, I understand the importance of staying within, you know, what the laws say, and the word impact is defined, right, by law. So, you know, but as a layperson, the word impact means something, I think, more robust. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the spirit in which I'm hearing Dr. Noble's comment. And one of the things that continues to reverberate for me as I think about not only what our statutory confined sort of powers are, it's also that key call out for the power to convene and the power to question. Which has always been something that I found to be an interesting broader articulation of what the appropriate nature of what it is we do here. So in the spirit of that important role that we have, I think there may be a way to not get afar from where we need to be focusing at from a CSAC perspective and how we evaluate and approve charters. Again, that's where the impact word comes in, but the broader idea of this interest in this question and how we can further that within the confines of what we're authorized to do as a citizens board that can question and convene stakeholders on these points.
No, I think that was very well said, Wally, as usual. Any other questions or comments? Okay, then with that, I'm going to say anyone, obviously we have more time in front of us, send those to Jenna, to Vince, to Audrey. We're going to have a very similar dialogue on major modifications, and we have two major modifications in front of us. These are going to have the exact same timeline as we do for new school applications. So I know this is probably early as well, but to the extent I'm going to throw out there, if anyone has questions, I know actually I have several, which I will forward along via Jenna and Mr. Loafing, but you know, essentially it's kind of looking at some of those things that I just touched on very briefly with respect to the fact that it is moving. You know, this is the Academia Antonio Alonso School. So the major modification is moving, it's getting bigger, it's moving to a new location. So just really trying to kind of ensure, you know, looking at teacher retention rate, does the fact that they would be moving to, you know, a different district have any kind of impact on that? And I'll kind of send these around, so I don't want to monopolize here because I know other people may have some questions as well. But I just want to make sure that, in my opinion, moving locations and in getting bigger at the same time, I think that we really do need to be kind of understanding the impact of what that change is. So, you know, looking at, you know, trend analysis of student enrollment in that district, looking at it by zip code of where it wants to go. I mean, these are all things that I think that kind of data is really important in understanding if there actually is demand and if the current enrollment and retention rates, if you can expect them to be the same, considering that you're fairly significantly moving the district or the placement of the school. So I can put that in writing if that would be easier to people.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, a recommendation I'd like to put forward is that the CSAC ask the school to do a survey of its current students and parents as to whether the kids are going to return if the school moves to that new location, so that they'll know if there's any unintended consequences of making that move, instead of just proposing that they'll do better because they're in an environment with more Latino families. But, you know, we have to be concerned about the students they're currently serving. And I didn't see any data to that effect, you know, in what I read. So I think, you know, surveying the parents, I know schools have done that numerous times for CSAC. So I think that's not an unusual ask.
Does anyone else have any further questions, comments? Okay. With that, again, same as we did for the new schools, to the extent that you do have any, please make sure that you get them to Jenna, Vince, and Audrey. I'll say just go, you can go directly to Jenna, and Jenna will make sure that she sends them to the person that's actually representing us on CSAC. That's probably the easiest thing to do. So thank you very much. Kim, did you have anything you wanted to add before? Okay, great. Thank you very much. Appreciate you being with us tonight. So next on the agenda are regulations. And so we have
Madam
five.
President,
yes.
Did we discuss East Side's charter major modification?
We actually just put it out there, kind of, if anyone had any questions, so okay. It wasn't specific. But if you want to specifically speak to East Side charter, then we can do that.
No, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure we didn't skip over it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I kept it kind of broad, just in terms of the two. I personally had some questions on the one, but I don't want to cut anyone off if anyone has questions on either one of those. Okay, great. And thank you. Thank you, Vince, for bringing that up.